Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by nobody. I'm sorry. I actually had plans to have one of our kind of matchup preview things, but, you know, I like to bring on guests to do that, and the guest that I was going to have on for today's show, is busy covering the team that they cover. But I promise that is lined up as well. And then tomorrow and then the following day after that, we have, you know, we'll have a guest. At least Pete will be on, so we'll be set there. All right. Today's show, what we're going to do is go through some of the stories that I have found notable thus far in coming out of training camp, and I'll give my 2 cents on that. We'll see how far that gets us into the show, and then from there we'll open it up to the rest of the mailbag here, which I again was not able to get to all of the questions to because there are a ton out of there. So let's start here with the stories that I find interesting. First off, it's not that I find it a positive form of interesting here, but I think one of the more predictable things that we could have kind of foreseen going into training camp was going to be a ton, full court press style, state radio and state TV telling us about how great Rajon Rondo has looked. My favorite thing about it, though, so you get all of the things, you know, I think it was one of my bingo options, was Rajon Rondo was like a coach on the court. I think LeBron James called him a quarterback, which, LeBron, you played football. If you have two quarterbacks, you don't have any quarterbacks. It's been funny to see the type of spin that you would anticipate from that stuff. But then stuff kind of, you know, the reality of the situation here regarding Rondo comes through the gaps of those leaks where it's, you know, Rajon Rondo has looked incredible out there. And we got a report today that, Frank Vogel was telling dribblers not to over dribble around Avery Bradley because he kept knocking the ball loose. Guess who he was knocking the ball loose from, though? Our boy. It's our dude, Rajon Rondo. So I found that really funny. There was also a couple, there have been some clips of scrimmages at the end of practices when the media starts making their way into practice to start getting their quotes and stuff. And it's been funny to watch, you know, Rondo be involved in negative plays in almost all of those clips there, and Alex Caruso involved in very positive plays, or even Avery Bradley involved in some of the positive plays there. It's just, I'm going to have to watch myself over the course of at least the beginning of the season because Rondo is probably going to start. So I don't want to sit here and beat a dead horse constantly, but you know, I talked just in yesterday's show about eye test stuff or trends that we kind of notice and that matching up with either stuff that we see in the game or statistical analysis of the game. And in this case, the trend that we kind of all foresaw is coming to fruition. So here we are with Rajon Rondo. I'll try not to beat a dead horse there. The other thing that I have found interesting here, and it's not the kind of thing that should shock anybody, but it seems the Lakers are having almost, for lack of a better term, trouble with with LeBron and Anthony Davis being too good out there that they can't find competition that keeps scrimmages or whatever close so that LeBron or Davis are actually getting anything from the practice. That's a good thing, right? One thing I wasn't really interested to see or hear much about in scrimmages where LeBron and Davis were playing in was, oh, the second unit gave the starting group a run for their money. If that would have been the case, either Rondo was that bad or LeBron and AD couldn't get on the same page and the bench unit was able to take advantage. Thus far, we have heard that LeBron and AD have just outright dominated a scrimmage to the point where I believe in today's scrimmages, the stuff from yesterday, by the time you guys are listening to this, you heard about, or we heard about them going 4-on-4 instead of 5-on-5, allowing Davis and James to sit out a little bit. So that's been good to hear as well, that they have been on the same page. The other thing, you know what? Yeah, well, I'll talk about one more thing here. The other cool thing to come out of this has been the amount of talk about the SB 206 bill that Gavin Newsom signed into effect on the shop with LeBron James. I thought LeBron's quotes on it were great, and they were very prescient in how he talked about what it would have been meant for him when he was coming out of high school. And I thought Kyle Kuzma's statements on that were also really fascinating. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a quick second here. When we come back, I'm going to, you know, read those quotes to you guys so you guys have them. I'm not going to spout political stuff on this, you know, subject or on this podcast. That's not what you listen for. But I thought that their statements on all of this were very fascinating. And I thought that they're the kind of things that you can't really ignore. So hang tight. We'll come back to that here in a second. All right. So the first bit here was obviously LeBron talking about this at Media Day, and it had to do with the SB 206 and Gavin Newsom signing it on his show. He was asked, "Why do you take this so personally?" And LeBron responded as such. He goes, if I can get down to the quote, "I was one of those unprivileged kids. I was fortunate enough and talented enough to be able to skip college. But for sure, I would have been one of those kids had I went off to Ohio State or had I went off to one of these big-time colleges where that 23 jersey would have gotten sold all over the place without my name on the back, but everybody would have known the likeness. My body would have been on an NCAA basketball game in 2004, and Schottenstein Center would have been sold out every single night if I was there. Me and my mom, we didn't have anything, and we wouldn't have been able to benefit from all of it, at all from it. And the university would have been able to capitalize on everything. So I understand what those kids are going through. I feel for those kids who have been going through it for so long, and that's why it was personal for me." Kyle Kuzma then, in his reaction to the SB 206, I thought Kuzma's was really interesting, because one thing that we kind of lack in our society is the empathy for other people who have different, you know, experiences and backgrounds than we do. And Kyle Kuzma is not the kind of athlete, or was not the kind of athlete in college who would have benefited from SB 206. He didn't have a jersey that people were, you know, going out of their way to buy, and you know, in this respect, I thought it was really great that Kuzma was able to look past that and basically say, yeah, this is something that should have been corrected a really long time. So this is via Kyle Goon of the OC Register and the Southern California News Group, I believe it is. Yeah, Southern California News Group. He covered, actually, Kyle Kuzma in college. So, you know, it's fascinating to get that angle of all this as well. Kuzma says, "So like doing something like a commercial in the state of California, that's going to drive kids that are thinking that way. In the social media age of what we live in, it's huge. You see these high school kids who have 200,000 followers, some 500,000. They're known commodities already, and brands and companies, they thrive off influencers. Influencers, you got 200K, 500K. Like, shit, I want to give him something because he can push my brand. So I think that's going to be very interesting from the standpoint of, if I'm a kid and I have a big following and I want to get my money off the court, why would I not go to UCLA or USC in a big area? Why am I not going to Duke or Kentucky, schools who have like a big name? They're going to benefit a lot from that standpoint, with kids wanting to go to areas where they can get deals, use their likenesses, maximize it." So it sounds a little bit like he's concerned about whether or not this might drive a bigger gap between the haves and have-nots in college. And look, that's something that's going to have to be addressed. The other side of that coin, I would say, is that it might actually equalize some of the scholarship opportunities. So if you're going to a small school in if you're an athlete and there's a school in California, you know, say Cal right now, right? Cal hasn't been good at basketball in forever. So if Cal goes to you and says, "Hey, we might not offer you the same platform as a Duke or a North Carolina or whatever, but we can have you benefit from SB 206." There's a better chance that Cal might benefit from this this bill and be able to be more competitive than they have been historically against Duke, North Carolina, the major basketball schools, right? So I'm really interested to see where all of this goes, but I thought Kuzma basically, you know, saying that this was it's mostly a good thing, LeBron especially going really hard at it being a good thing. I tend to side with them on this subject, and I hope that the powers that be, especially with the NCAA and now the Pac-12, who weren't exactly thrilled with SB 206, I hope that they recognize the right thing to do here and don't try to make, you know, don't try to beat down California for trying to be progressive on something that should have been fixed a long time ago. The other things that have caught my eye from training camp thus far has been the amount of pub that Dwight Howard has gotten and how much respect he's gotten for showing up. I believe Frank Vogel said that he has a business-only mentality or whatever the quote or cliche that was used there came to signify. I criticized the Dwight Howard signing. I'm still not positive about it, but I hope to be wrong there. And if Dwight Howard can prove me wrong and everybody else, a lot of the other people, you know, it's not like I was alone in criticizing the move, but if he can prove some people wrong here, he might be able to extend his career. And more importantly, you know, he talked about reaching rock bottom in life and the people who learn from rock bottom, you know, that tends to be a pretty cool redemption story. So I hope that Dwight has matured and has actually shown up and done some things at camp that impress people. And from the people that you talk to who've been around the Lakers, they all say like he's actually really impressed. So that's been good to see as well. Training camp, though, just an important reminder here, training camp isn't always the best place to get the best information, right? What usually comes out of training camp is overly positive. It's you know, unrealistically positive in some cases. So what you have to be able to find a way to do is kind of translate and understand what it is that you're reading and you know, don't buy too far into things that you want to see happen anyway, right? So if I'm somebody who is hoping to see that Avery Bradley wins the starting point guard job, and I'm hoping that he has this incredible bounce back season this year, well, it'd be way too easy for me to just buy into everybody saying, no, this guy has been killing it in camp, and ignore the context of, well, he's killing it in camp because Rajon Rondo has been getting minutes as the starting point guard, right? So, you know, stay realistic on this stuff, and you know the games start in only a few days here, so we get to start to see some of that stuff as well. Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, I will answer as many questions as I possibly can. I gave us enough room here just because you don't want to hear me just kind of go on and on and on about subjects that I find interesting, and I want to leave some of these interesting subjects for tomorrow's show when Pete joins us. So hang tight. When we come back, I'll answer. I'll keep on or start answering as many questions as I can. All right, so Polo5353 writes, do you think that starting KCP is the best option for a LeBron offense? No, I still think Avery Bradley handles the ball a little bit better, and there is value in having somebody who is capable enough at merely dribbling the ball across half court. KCP can't quite do that. He dribbles like a shooter is how I would kind of summarize that. I think in terms of the Lakers' options at point guard to start, probably go Avery Bradley, then Caruso, then, you know, 3A, 3B would be KCP and Rajon Rondo. And then, you know, that's without even talking about guys like Quinn Cook and Troy Daniels. Both, you know, Troy Daniels especially is more of a shooting guard anyway, but both those guys, they're going to be zone busters, right? If the opposing defense is sagging way off everybody else who's playing at that point guard spot, then you bring somebody in who can kind of space the floor and see what the offense can do to get kind of a kickstart there. So that's the order I would go there. KCP this year, I think for him, the ideal role is bring him into a game where he only has to think about, you know, a very simple approach to defense, and you can feel free to shoot the ball every time you catch it, so long as you don't dribble. that's kind of the way I would utilize KCP. Let's go to the next question here. David Balderston writes, "Hey, Anthony and Pete, this is the first year I'm having trouble getting excited for the start of the season. It's weird because we have two superstars, but I am scared to get attached. For years, I've listened to every pod and watched every LFR video, but have struggled to get into them this summer. The end of last year was the most frustrated I have ever been in this offseason, watching everybody I love be shipped out, people I disliked re-signed, multiple front office blunders, and DeMarcus already injured. I'm afraid to open up my heart again just to have it shattered. Do you have any encouraging words or thoughts to get me back to feeling the excitement of the beginning of the season like I used to?" Well, I don't think you're really alone there from the standpoint of, so wait, you guys were terrible, right? If I'm a fan and the Lakers just told me to hang tight while we are terrible and while we, you know, get all these kids that you can then be invested in. And, you know, it was packaged as, look, you guys were close to Kobe because we drafted him or we acquired him on draft day. And you got to watch the beginning to the end of his entire career in which he won us 5 championships and all these things. You compare, you know, they basically said, here's that, but multiplied over an entire core of an organization, right? And then, you know, slowly but surely and then really fast, right at the end, all those kids were gone. And all that is left is Kyle Kuzma. So I can understand why I would be a little annoyed if I bought into this long rebuild and talked myself into the idea of it, only to have that, you know, kind of traded all away for somebody that, you know, maybe the Lakers could have been able to sign in free agency the following year, right? I not to say that I disagree with acquiring Anthony Davis. I disagree with some of the process, but, you know, that's another subject altogether. But in terms of why it might be hard on an even broader schedule or level to buy into the Lakers as they stand right now. Well, we've seen the worst case scenario for all of the last 7 years, basically, right? Now, the lotteries went well and all of that. But in terms of, you know, outcomes of each individual season, it was just kicking the nuts after kicking the nuts after kicking the nuts after kicking the nuts. So eventually you buy a cup, right? Eventually you kind of cover yourself up and you do whatever you can to ensure that you don't get hurt the same way all over again. So I think that's kind of a coping mechanism here that I understand. The way I would kind of deal with it is the NBA this year is filled with a bunch of teams that each have at least one major question facing them, right? Even the Milwaukee Bucks have the question facing them of, wait, Eric Bledsoe has basically played off the court last year, and we lost one of the more important point guards in all of the league for basically nothing. How are we going to deal with that? The Golden State Warriors obviously aren't the same caliber of team The Clippers need creative players at the top of their roster who aren't their primary scorers. The Sixers are trying to figure out a way to get Ben Simmons, Al Horford, and Joel Embiid all minutes somehow, when I don't think those three guys can play together, right? You can't stick... You might be able to stick Al Horford in the corner, but that's not really how you want to use him. You can't stick Joel Embiid in the corner because that seems like a waste of his abilities. And if you stick Ben Simmons in the corner, he might actually develop cobwebs down there. So I all of these teams that are entering this upcoming season have major questions facing them, just like the Lakers do. And I think that makes for a really fascinating season. I can't wait to see how this season plays out, not just from the standpoint of a Laker fan, but what does this mean moving forward for the NBA? Is this the direction that the NBA is going to go in, where you have a bunch, a lot more of imperfect teams versus two or three quote-unquote perfect teams, and it's just a matter of which team comes out ahead of those two teams, right? So that's this season is different. It's different in many different ways here, and I can't wait to watch how it all plays out. It's going to be great. Other than that, you know, it's just a matter of buying in despite the chance of being hurt. Right, that's what faith is. Now, blind faith isn't great. You still want to protect yourself a little bit every so often. But you know, if it was the kind of year where you knew going in the Lakers were going to win a championship, and that's where your expectations were heading into the season, well, it's pretty easy for you to be let down there. This year, the Lakers have relatively straightforward expectations, I think, that they can meet and maybe even succeed or exceed. And that's the kind of thing that's the kind of season that people look back on as their favorite seasons ever. Let's go one more question here before we get out of here. And this way I could save a few of these questions for Pete over the next course of the week. QBreezy12 writes, just wanted to hear what your thoughts are on the whole Popovich-Belichick media shtick. Used to find it amusing, but at this point, I think it's pretty annoying / counterproductive. And with the way Belichick has been handling the Antonio Brown questions, I think it's kind of pathetic. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird that people have just allowed Greg Popovich and Bill Belichick to just be dicks, right? Like, it's kind of weird that because they've succeeded, they're just allowed to treat people badly in those kinds of situations. All the reporter is trying to do there is their job, where they can ask some kind of a question, maybe get an interesting answer, and relay that back to the fan at home who wants a little bit more insight into their favorite team or their favorite sport. Now, as a coach, I can understand why those like mid-quarter interviews would drive me insane. I'm here trying to coach my team, and you're going to come over here and ask me what's the difference in this game, when really, usually, the difference in this game is we've made a few more shots, they've missed a few more shots, or vice versa, right? So I understand why some of the frustration is there, but look, we all endure frustration over the course of our days, right? And what we can't all do is just be dicks to everybody around us. That's not a mature way to handle that kind of a situation, no matter what the frustration might be. So yeah, I mean, it's not the kind of thing that they want to deal with. They you know, that thing being the media, but that doesn't mean that they can treat the media however they want to treat them in that moment. It's not right. And then, you know, the idea that Bill Belichick would be offended at especially I believe it was a female reporter asked Bill Belichick about the Antonio Brown thing. Like, if there's a segment of your audience that you need to appease right now, it's that one. And what are you doing getting angry at a woman for asking a perfectly logical question, which was, I believe, what was the final straw with Antonio Brown? Like, that's a perfectly fine question that needs to be asked there. What was the difference? Why did you guys sign him, play him, feature him heavily, and then get rid of him with another allegation that was not all that different from the first allegations that arose before you played him that first Sunday? That was a perfectly fine question. And the way that he handled it, I thought was pretty gross. I agree with QBZ12. It was pretty pathetic. So, that's my take on those guys is don't be dicks. Don't be assholes. And it's like that we all slip. We all do. I get it. There are some days that you just don't feel like answering some of those questions and you don't feel like talking about some of these things. But somebody is on the other end of you being a dick. And, you know, you're treating that person that same way. Well, guess what that's going to do? You're paying it. They're going to pay that forward for in the opposite way. I guess pay it backwards. That's not great. So, anywho, that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. Thank you guys very much for the questions that you have asked and the continued reviews. I appreciate that. Thank you to some of the shows out there that are biting this way of generating reviews. That's been really nice to see. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.